Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
6:10, debate day is here tonight at 8 o'clock Chicago time. Yes, I'll live tweet it. Tonight, Hillary versus Don, Don versus Hillary, Trump versus Clinton. And 100 million people are expected to watch. Many deciding for the first time who they will vote for on November 8th. Obviously a lot about that this morning. The Bears are really probably worse than we expected. Last night's game was not as close as the final score. Adam Hogue and Dan Hampton this morning on that. And yesterday afternoon, Arnold Palmer died at the age of 87. It's not unusual for a man of 87 to pass, but when there's someone that is literally the Mount Rushmore of sports, he's got a face up there. It's sad. It's sad to lose him. But, man, you talk about a life well lived. We got plenty on that this morning as well. And I think you all know I'm a little nuts for golf, so we can get into that. Dr. Most, by the way, know Palmer a little bit and caddied for him at 16, at 16 years old.
Did he really?
Yeah.
As an Evans Scholar? Well, he was an Evans Scholar, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Dr. Most? Yep.
I would have been just before that.
Dean Richards, later on Show Business, of course, and we'll look at the debate in general from Southern Illinois University. Dr. Todd Graham, he's director of debate there. Give us a little insight on how these two might go at each other to bring a full circle. You got the music for Paul? These debates are not convenient for us, Paul Connor.
No, not at all.
I mean, 8 o'clock tonight.
Right.
I mean, who stays up till then?
Right.
Crazy.
You're going to miss out on us and all the other senior citizens.
Oh, it's ridiculous. You know, this is America. You have dinner at 5, you spend some time with your kids at 6:15, and you go to bed at 7.
Chop, chop. Let's do it at around 1 this afternoon.
All right, so I look at this debate tonight you're kind of babysitting, you're kind of parenting. You know, these two are children.
Right.
They'll be snapping at each other.
Yeah.
So you got
with
a house.
Little towels.
Yeah, you got a house full of kids.
Yeah.
So if you were Lester Holt, how would you settle the score between these two?
You know, I have long felt that oftentimes we try to be too intellectual on this stuff and that it should be left to like a wrestling match.
Well, I don't think intellectual and Trump are in the same sentence. You're the first one to ever use those in the same sentence.
I just say, let's wrestle. They each get to bring one person and you go at it for an hour. And so, it has to be a full hour.
Now, hold on a second. She's 68, he's 70.
Now,
are you suggesting
watch.
They wrestle?
Yeah.
Oh, the two of them?
Yeah. Let them wrestle.
Let me tell you something. I'd take her.
Yeah.
I would take her.
I think you might take her.
Yeah, I would take her in that.
But you have to last a full hour. That's the problem. I got you as a guy. You're good for like the first 6 minutes. And then.
Let's see who's got the energy now, Donnie.
Right.
Let's see who's got the stamina now.
A full hour.
You see Hillary putting him in a headlock, just pulling that hairpiece off?
Now, typically, I would say that'd be far more interesting than
the actual debate.
Right.
Yeah.
But this time around, God knows what's going to happen.
It may turn into that. Yeah, it may turn into that. What I look forward to is the long-winded Hillary Clinton answers that put me to sleep, combined with the confused look like a dog that hears a funny noise when Trump gets asked a policy question.
Could you imagine being Lester Holt?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm surprised he didn't quit. I'm surprised when they said to Lester, you need to do this first debate, that he didn't go, call Williams.
Yeah.
Bring Brian Williams
back. Let's give
He's
him
already
another.
Claiming he did the debate.
Let's
bring him back.
Give him another shot.
And what about juice boxes for everybody when they're done?
Yeah.
Right? Nothing settles children down more than snacks.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch.
You're not going to watch it. Who are you
kidding? I think I will watch.
You're going to stay up?
Yeah, I don't get to bed ever before 10 o'clock, so why not?
So you really stay up till 10 o'clock?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, I do, but my kids are grown-ups.
Yeah. I just, sometimes I get lost.
You just wander around the apartment?
I'm wandering around, and I find my watch or a clock, and I'm like, hey, I got to get up in 4 hours.
What time do you get up?
I'm up at around 2:30.
2:30 and 10 o'clock. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's something that's not right there.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to kill you by the time you're 60.
But I'm great driving in. And I drive in, man. I'm one of the better drivers out there.
Well, I am too, because I'm wide awake at this hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to start this show.
But you need that drive in to kind of come to life.
When you don't want to talk to me is 10:01.
Yeah.
10:01 to the rest of the day.
Right.
I'm not much use to
I'm
anybody.
With you.
All right, so tonight I'm going to live tweet this. Are you on the Twitter?
I am on the Twitter, yeah.
Well, you should be watching then, because I'm going to be live tweeting.
Yeah, I have a hard time tweeting and watching something at the same time.
Yeah, see, I don't. I'm going to say hilariously witty things, some of them smart, some of them biting.
Yeah.
So you'll be all over that.
All right, I might schedule some of my tweets now, start working on them, and then just schedule them to go out during that time.
All right. And,
see if they match up.
And let's retweet each other.
All right.
Even if what we say is stupid.
Right. I love tweaking your tweets.
All right. It's Paul Conrad analyzing the debate tonight.
Woo!
I'm going to retweet both of you.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
He just wants to be tweaked.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
And it looks like you're not getting on today because I'm watching Channel 9 in the monitors here. It doesn't appear you're going to be on.
They don't really care so much lately. They've been phoning it in. So.
Any words on Robert Jordan's retirement? I know that party was last night.
I missed it.
Okay. All right. So there you go. That wraps up his career.
He's retiring?
Yeah, he's out. Somebody should send you a memo.
I got to turn my computer on every once in a while.
That's here. Paul Conrad. All right, I love you.
I'll see you when I get home. I need a gallon of milk if you have a minute.
Yeah, I'll pick it up. No problem. By the way, I will be out after tomorrow. I'll do the show tomorrow, and then I'll be out for the rest of the week because I need some time after the debate tonight.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Going to have to collect my thoughts.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Barrett Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
/6:22 He watches them so you don't have to. Except last night, because it was prime time again, we all had to endure the pain of the Bears' defeat at the hands of the Cowboys. They're 0-3. And if you look at the schedule, Adam Hoge, I don't see a win. Let me go to the phone where Adam Hoge is actually this morning. Hey Adam, let's pretend none of that happened. If you look at the schedule, I don't see a win.
Yeah, well, the Jaguars are 0-3, and they play them in a few weeks.
Can't really count on that, though, can we?
That's all I got for you. I mean, it's that bad. And hey, at least they beat the other 0-3 team in the preseason, the fourth preseason game.
Here's the thing that people need to understand: if they didn't stay with the game the whole night, you may wake up this morning, check the score, and go, "Well." No, there's no well. It wasn't that close. It wasn't as close as the final score. The Cowboys could have won that thing by 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, I imagine that Jason Garrett's not too happy with his team's performance in the second half. I thought they kind of let up offensively and defensively, and that's why this became a 31-17 game. But look, the Bears lost this game in the first quarter, and it was a complete domination at one point. Cowboys had 18 first downs. The Bears had just 2. They had run 39 offensive plays to just 12 for the Bears. And that's really, I think those stats kind of tell the story of this game a little bit more than the final score did.
And here's the thing, David, and it as well, that the NFL is about preparation. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a week to get ready for a game. You're 0-2 going into this game. The Cowboys are not a great team. They're not a legendary team. They've got another. This is, by the way, another rookie quarterback you're going to be facing. And in a week to get ready, if you get blown out in the first quarter, it only comes down to two things: personnel and coaching. So there's two failures right there of epic proportion. And I'm sure John Fox took credit for it at the end of the game, didn't he?
Well, that's what kind of surprises me so much about this start to the Bears season. I mean, I guess I'm not completely shocked they're 0-3. I didn't think they would be 0-3. But what's really alarming to me is how they came out of the gate last night so flat and unprepared, like you just mentioned. I mean, they were not prepared offensively. They had a whole week of practice. Brian Hoyer's a smart quarterback. I think you saw in the second half that he's not Jimmy Clausen. He's much better than what the Bears had at backup quarterback last year.
Right.
But the first play of the game, he's not on the same page with the running back. supposed to hand the ball off, doesn't, and it's a busted play after a whole week of practice.
Right. And by the way, the easiest possible play you can have of a scripted 15, it's a handoff. It's a dive.
Yeah. And just I thought in general, Dow Loggins, the Bears offensive coordinator, who's I think rightly getting a lot of heat early on in the season, I just didn't like how horizontal the game plan was on a night where I think you saw in the second half they had the capability to go more vertical to open things up. Kevin White, if there's one positive, was actually out there making a couple plays, although six catches and 62 yards looks nice, but then you consider he was targeted 14 times and it doesn't look as good. But I just didn't like the game plan early. I didn't think the Bears were prepared offensively, and I just think it put the defense in a really tough position once again when they got to be on the field that much in the first half and they don't have Eddie Goldman or Danny Trevathan out there.
Adam's report, by the way, sponsored by C.J. Wilson Mazda. I agree with you. White was a bright spot, Adam, and the other bright spot, I thought, and not totally unexpected, was Jordan Howard. I every time this kid gets in there, he seems to do something good.
Yeah, he does, and I think the problem there is that, once again, he only gets the ball nine times in terms of handoffs, at least. But 45 yards on nine carries, that's a five-yard average. That's pretty good. But, man, these run-the-pass numbers from last night are crazy. They only hand the ball off 12 times to the running back, and Brian Hoyer throws the ball 49 times. That's just staggering. Now, that's what happens when you are losing 10-0 before anyone has really sat down on their couch and is paying attention to the game. But still, and Jordan Howard, though, at least also found the ball four times through the air. So he ends up putting up, 92 yards of total throughout the running and catching, and I think that was at least one of the positives. Unfortunately, Jeremy Langford, guys, might have a serious ankle injury. He left in a boot walking out of the locker room, and that's concerning going forward.
All right, so here's what we have. We got a situation with one of the two worst teams in the National Football League, who next week go up against the Detroit Lions, who are angry because they're off to a start that's much worse than their fans expected. And I believe I'm right about this. I don't think the Bears have beaten the Lions at their place since Lovey was the coach. Is that right?
They haven't beaten them at all since Lovey Smith was the head coach. And that's kind of staggering to think about. I had to look that up and triple check it last night because I knew it had been a while since the Bears had beaten the Lions, but I didn't realize it was six straight times, three times in Detroit, three times in Chicago. That's the one team that you should, in this division, in the NFC North, that's the one team the Bears should at least get one win against every single season. But for the last 3 years, they failed to do so, including on their home field.
And, you know, they almost came back yesterday. They did come back against the Packers. They came up a little bit short. They were down 31-3 in that game and ended up making it a game in the second half. And Matthew Stafford threw, I think, three touchdown passes. And I mean, this is not going to be an easy game, even at home, for the Bears.
Well, now you start playing these experienced quarterbacks, right? And by the way, I think Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott are good football players. But, you know, the thing, again, kind of going back to big picture here that concerns me, you know, last year when the Bears started 0-3, at least they could fall back on the fact that they played the Packers, they played the Arizona Cardinals, they played the Seattle Seahawks. They had a really tough schedule to start the year last year. And no one was surprised when they were 0-3 to start the year. This year, they played three quarterbacks that had a combined 10 career starts in the NFL. And yes, Dak Prescott looks good and Carson Wentz looks good, but I don't know if you saw Brock Osweiler this week. Didn't look all that good. And the Bears made him look pretty good in week one. The schedule is nowhere near as tough as it was a year ago. So I think it's fair to wonder, has this team actually regressed from year one to year two? That's the big problem here as we step back and look at the big picture after 3 weeks.
We're going to be out of time here, but before we are out of time, let me just ask you one final question. We saw Adam Gase quite a bit last night. They kept flashing him sitting upstairs, right? He's sitting in a suite.
Dell Loggins.
No, the GM.
Ryan Pace.
Ryan Pace.
Yeah.
Who's Adam Gase?
Adam Gase, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
Wow. I don't know what he was doing at the game last night. We saw Ryan Pace last night sitting upstairs. Look, it's very early and it's Monday. And they showed him 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times. Doesn't there have to be a little bit of Ryan Pace, or maybe Adam Gase is in this meeting, along with Fox sitting down and going, what the hell are we going to do about this?
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair question, and I think part of the issue here is certainly personnel. If you're going to ask me which one do you start putting the blame on first, I think it's really concerning that the coaching staff doesn't have these guys ready at this point. There hasn't been enough progress from year one to year two, because I think the roster is better right now than it was last year. But let's look at that game again real quickly last night. Where was Leonard Floyd, your first-round draft pick that you traded up for to get at number 9? I mean, that's concerning. You start a fourth-rounder, Nick Kwiatkowski, on defense, that you passed on Dak Prescott for. There were two other guys you had in your roster that you passed on Dak Prescott for in the fourth round that were totally invisible last night. So these are kind of the decisions that in year two you start to look at the GM too. I think it's way too early. Really, I think it's too early for both of those guys to get put under the microscope too much, but we're starting to get to that point.
And where do we read you this week?
WGNRadio.com/Bears.
And Adam's report is sponsored by C.J. Wilson Mazda, now serving you in Countryside, Orland Park, and Lake Villa, online at ZoomZoomNation.com.
Remembering Arnold Palmer with Dr. Kevin Most, the only guy I know that likes golf more than me. Big story before we get to that. That's next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Arnold Palmer, paired with Dave Marr, who takes the pressure of playing with a champion in his stride. This 25-foot birdie putt gives Marr the second-place tie with Nicklaus. But oh, that man Palmer. Here's his wind-up putt. He gets a 70, which added to two 69s and a 68 gives him a 276, 12 under par, and the Masters by 6 shots. The man he dethroned, Jack Nicklaus, helps him don the traditional green jacket that goes with the Masters. Palmer gets $20,000 and brings his earnings as a pro past the half-million mark. Another first by Arnie the Magnificent.
Arnold Palmer dies at 87. What a life. What a life lived. I wrote a blog called The First Superstar because he really was just that. He invented superstar in athletics and lived his life in a way that, you know, we all hear stories. And Dave, you and I have been around for a while. I've never in my life, and I mean this literally, and I'm pretty close to golf, I've never come across anyone who said, wait till you hear what a jerk Palmer is.
No question.
The thousands and thousands of people that he met. And he appears to have left a positive impression on all of them. It's an amazing story. There's a picture we're going to put up here in a little bit as Dr. Kevin Most joins us. A picture of Dr. Kevin Most at maybe, what, 16 years old?
Yeah, it was either 16 or 17. It was that summer. I'm not sure.
Nice hair, David Cassidy.
Hey, you know, I didn't have time to get a haircut.
Dr. Kevin Most with a shock of blonde hair. He looks like a roadie for the flock of seagulls. You caddied for Arnold Palmer in what event?
Yeah, there was a pro-am at Butterfield Country Club for Children's Memorial Hospital, put on by United Airlines. And Arnie came and played, and I was fortunate that I was the top caddy, so I got to caddy for Arnie. And kind of the ironic or cool thing about that this day is that the guy who caddied, who finished second to me that year, is my good friend, your friend, Larry Ryan.
Yeah, guy you've been best friends with almost your whole life.
We've been friends for 40 years.
Yeah.
And he caddied for the Wally Phillips. They played in the same group.
How about that? Did Wally have any game?
No, none whatsoever. And it was so funny. Wally came and he was wearing obnoxious. I'm going to send you a picture of what he wore that day. Just these obnoxious clothes, loud, and I mean, sparkle. And he said on the first tee, you know, I'm playing with Arnold Palmer. It's the only way anybody's going to notice.
Well, me. There you go. He's not wrong about that, is he?
Yep.
And if he could be with Wally Phillips and he's the other guy in the group, that was pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah, especially in Chicago.
What do you remember of that day? What do you remember of what Palmer said? Were you nervous?
No, you know, oh, God, yeah, was I nervous. But, you know, parts of it I remember like it was yesterday. You know, I you played Butterfield, standing on the first tee, his pilot, because he had a private plane, his pilot brought down his golf bag, and stands, sits in front of me there, and I'm standing there holding the bag going, holy cow, this is Arnold Palmer's golf bag. And Palmer had gone into the locker room and obviously was, being, shepherded around by people. But, he walks up on the first tee and, looks me right in the eye, and I'm, 16, 17 years old. His big old hand, shakes my hand. Arnold Palmer.
Rips your arm off.
Yeah. I'm looking at him going, God, I know who you are.
Hi, I'm Kevin Most.
It was. And, you rarely, and at that time, like I said, it was a top caddy at Butterfield. I never got nervous out there. I knew the course forward and backward, but
yeah,
it was so different. Every hole, okay, where should I hit it? I'm like,
so he did ask you to club him. He asked you, or at least asked you what the lines were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He asked me lines. He didn't, he never asked me clubs. He asked me lines. And on the first hole, he said, hey, you know what? I know, let me tell you how I like the game, and let me tell you what I like out of a caddy. So here he is. He's playing in this event, and yet he's trying to help me along. And it was really cool.
I can't imagine. And it probably felt like it lasted 10 minutes, right?
Oh, God, yeah. But it was neat. I mean, he was an absolute gentleman the entire time. I still have the $20 he gave me.
Oh, I wouldn't have spent it either. I think that's absolutely cool.
Yep.
As you went along, did he loosen up is not the right word, but did he ask about you? Did he talk about you?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Wanted to know about me, wanted to know about my family, how I was doing in school. And, here he's playing with Wally, the CEO of United Airlines, and I can't remember who the other big benefactor was. And he interacted with everybody, interacted with the crowd. I mean, there was, people lining the fairways and just, talking to people and gracious as could be.
This would have been when, 70, 71, 72?
No, God, no. 74, 75.
Oh, 74, 75.
Summer of 75, actually.
Yep. His last win on tour, I think, was 1974, which is another piece of the story, which is amazing, because the guy's a household name in 2016. He hadn't won on the regular tour in 43 years. It tells you how much he did to really instill himself in everyone's life and be a constant presence in America. But what kind of game did he have then?
Oh, phenomenal game. I mean, unbelievable. He sat on the first tee, and he had asked me earlier while he said, how far, if you remember Butterfield, there was a big old oak right in the middle of the first fairway.
Yep.
He asked me how far it is to that oak. And I said, I was kind of guessing. He said, no, I really want to know how far it is. So he went on and did a little putting clinic, and we paced it off. And he was now going to do a clinic on the first tee. So he comes back. He said, how far is it to that oak? I said, 184 yards. So he picked out a 6-iron, five iron, whatever he hit, and hit it. His first shot landed right at the base of the first tree.
That's pretty impressive.
I mean, it was like,
that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and this is long before range finders, kids, where the caddies actually had to know the numbers.
Oh, yeah, it was. And it was math. And he was very interesting. Fortunately, I had caddied the summer before for Steve Melnick and at the Western Open. Uh-huh. And, the pros like distance is different than we do. we're always say, tell me how far it is to the pin. They want to know how far it is to the front of the green and then how far it is to the pin. And he would always ask me, okay, how far to the front, how far to the pin?
Right.
And it was just a really a cool day.
When you finished, what did he say to you?
Big old shake my hand, thank you, keep it up. He was very encouraging. And then, I was fortunate I ran into him years later, and we can talk about that story, too, because it was a lot of fun as well.
Stand by, more with Dr. Most coming up. And we got a little medicine to talk about as well, because amongst the things that Arnold Palmer accomplished in his life was starting a hospital. And a hospital with real, real big impact in the Orlando, Florida area in particular on pediatric cancer and cancer research with some great doctors and great facilities. And Dr. Most can talk about that. Remembering Arnold Palmer, part of the show today for obvious reasons.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
He's from Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Most right now.
Talking to Dr. Most, remembering Arnold Palmer. And Arnold Palmer died yesterday at 87. A life well lived beyond all measures. Hey, look, there's nothing you could say that really does Arnold Palmer justice, because he accomplished so much in 87 years. You know, he's probably just tired. It's time to go rest. But he won. We were just talking off the air. Total career winnings, Doc. Total career winnings. And this includes European Tour winnings, Senior Tour winnings. He helped start the Senior Tour. Never would have started without him.
What do you have? He had 62 on the PGA Tour, right?
Yeah, 95 worldwide.
Wow.
Total career winnings. And I want you to keep in mind that yesterday, Rory McIlroy won $12 million in one day. Well, 1 week. When he won the tournament.
$10 million just for the FedEx Cup.
Right. So when he won the FedEx Cup and the Tour Championship, $12 million. Palmer in his entire career won $7 million. $7 million total winnings. Now, there won't be a need for a bake sale for the family. His net worth is somewhere between $600 and $700 million. But again, it goes to this amazing story of how this guy invented the superstar athlete, invented branding, invented all of it. And I certainly hope that at least some of the modern-day athletes, not just golfers, understand that he did it. He created it. There's a guy named Mark McCormick who became really the first sports superstar agent. And the two of them together never had a contract. They had a handshake through all those years and just got it done. Because you know why, Doc? They were better than we were. They were better men than we were. They trusted each other.
Very true.
So, all right, so years later, you caddy for Palmer at 16. Years later, you meet him again where?
Yep, so years later, the Ameritech Senior Open, our great friend Peter DeYoung, who you'll see later this week.
Right.
Pro-Am, 1993. So the Bulls are right in the middle of their heyday, and I mean right in the middle of the three-peats. And he pairs Michael Jordan with Arnold Palmer to play in the Pro-Am.
So you, let's see, 93. So we're almost 20 years down the road from when you caddied for him. So you go up, shake his hand again. Did he remember the story?
No, but I told him the story. Then he just kind of smiled and laughed. He said, did we have fun? did I play well?
Well, you know what? I sort of respect the fact that he didn't go, I remember you. You were the kid with the bag.
Exactly. Exactly. It was very cool, but it was, you know, another great day to walk. You can imagine, we were walking security for Michael and Arnie, you know, for 18 holes to sit there and walk between two of the legends in their games. It was quite a day as well. And
okay.
Always thank Mr. DeYoung for that opportunity.
Arnold Palmer and his wife, his late wife, Winnie Palmer, both have children's hospitals with their names on them. There's the Winnie Palmer Hospital for Women and Babies and the Arnold Palmer Hospital for Children. Both pretty impressive facilities, right?
They are. You know, it's kind of cool. You know, he and Jack were such great competitors, but also such great friends. And the impact that both of them have made in Florida is just amazing. Between the Nicholas Children's Hospital in Miami and Arnie's hospital in Orlando, just a huge impact in pediatrics. And very cool stuff that they're doing. And both of them are not just, hey, slap my name on a hospital. They totally support the hospitals and make sure and they advance the hospitals. Both of them nationally ranked hospitals. These are nothing, you know. Arnie's Hospital, well known for cardiology in the Orlando area.
And pediatric cancer, one of the focuses?
Yeah, it is. You know, any of these children's hospitals, you certainly want to make sure that you have a big focus on oncology just because it's getting to be so specialized. And, you know, some great news came out last week on some pediatric cancer stuff that without places like this, you know, we wouldn't see that. We wouldn't have that opportunity. But, you know, last week, the cancer data came out that showed that pediatric deaths from cancer dropped 20% since 1999.
That's great.
Yeah. And leukemia used to be the number one cause of pediatric cancer death, and it no longer is. It's been overtaken by pediatric brain cancer. And you say, well, gosh, that's kind of a bummer, isn't it? But it's not that pediatric brain cancer is on a rise. It's that we have gotten so much better at treating pediatric leukemias to where we have a survival rate approaching 90%. So the impact that these guys have made, you know, not only in the golf game as ambassadors, but in the community and the health community for advancing pediatric oncology, pediatric cardiology as well, but have allowed numerous kids to live for what used to be a potential death sentence.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's that greatest generation thing to some extent, but when you have fame and wealth and you use it for good the way that both of those guys have or did in the case of Mr. Palmer, that's great. And that hospital will live on for generations, you know, because of what he did. Anyway, great stories, Doc. Thank you for that.
Yeah, hope everyone has an Arnold Palmer at lunch today in his honor.
You could do worse, couldn't you?
Take a lemonade and iced tea and mix them up.
That's exactly right. And if you get a chance, watch the Golf Channel because they're going 24/7 with tributes and there's a lot of cool stuff there. Thanks, Doc. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
I know you are, but what am I?
He's really pretty close to unhinged, and you've seen it. You've seen it a couple of times.
I know you are, but what am I?
He's a loose cannon. I mean, he's somebody who has said so many things.
I know you are, but what am I?
Crooked Hillary, Father.
I know you are, but what am I?
I think he's the donkey of the decade.
I know you are, but what am I, Infinity? No, I'm not. You are.
She's the devil. He made a deal with the devil. True.
7:15. That's it tonight. 9 o'clock Chicago time. Live streaming on Facebook, abcnews.com as well, and various other places. The Clinton campaign, and, you know, I mean, this stuff follows the same pattern as sports. Both surrogate sides and campaign managers are trying to lower the expectations for their candidates, same way coaches do for their teams. But Hillary Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook, talking about his concern for Secretary Clinton tonight.
I'm very concerned that Donald Trump will be graded on the on a curve. Just because he doesn't fly off the handle in the middle of this debate does not mean that he is prepared to be president of the United States. He needs to have coherent answers to the question.
It's absolutely true. And there's nothing they can do about it. There's not a thing they can do about it. If Donald Trump doesn't lose his mind tonight and say something so patently ridiculous that he scares off people who haven't been paying attention to this, which is still most of the country, he will probably get the lion's share of the press tomorrow saying that at times he appeared presidential. That is literally grading on the curve. Trump manager Kellyanne Conway, again, a woman without a mirror, describes her candidate this way.
I can understand why the Clinton camp is very nervous because Donald Trump's got great president stature. He's a brilliant debater. Newt Gingrich put it best. The former speaker recently said, Donald Trump is the best debater he's ever seen. He's like the Babe Ruth of debating. He really shows up and swings and does a great job. And I, you know, he's a brilliant businessman who's got a great record. And he's, you know, we're very much looking forward to tomorrow night.
The Babe Ruth of debating. Is that worrying Babe Ruth spinning in his grave?
Might be.
Babe Ruth, who used to run naked through trains carrying hot dogs and beer while women with knives and husbands chased him. Babe Ruth would go, yeah, Trump's not a good guy. Donald Trump on his foundation and the scandal surrounding his foundation. This is the classic Trump move. Well, some people are saying, it's not me, some people are saying, here's Trump on his foundation, the one with his name on it.
Are you confident that the Trump Foundation has followed all charitable rules and laws?
Well, I hope so. I mean, my lawyers do it. We give away money. I don't make anything. I take no salaries. I take no any costs. I have zero costs. And a lot of money goes through the Trump Foundation into charities. It goes to charities. It doesn't go to me. It goes to charities. But I think my people do a very good job with it.
This idea that you can back out of everything and go, well, it wasn't me, it was them. That's the last move you can make as president. The buck stops here. The buck stops at your desk. No matter that the entire government works for you, no matter there's literally hundreds of thousands of people that work for you, somebody screws up on your watch, it's on you. How do you think that's going to go if he gets the gig? So much going on. I mean, one of the busier Mondays we've seen in a long time. And sadly, more incredible shootings over the weekend everywhere, along with a number of shootings here in Chicago that we've become numb to. A woman shot in front of her two kids in Joliet, which is a story breaking overnight that we're still putting the pieces together of. A four-year-old grazed in the shooting. Shooting in Baltimore, where multiple people died. Shooting in Washington State, where multiple people died. I mean, they barely make the top three stories anymore. It's unbelievable. So we'll update you on the Joliet story as we get more details as the morning rolls on. We're talking about the debate, of course, tonight as well, about the death of Arnold Palmer. More on that coming up. Hamp on the Bears. A couple of things that come from the debate stories. The podiums tonight have been adjusted accordingly. Hillary Clinton's about 5'4", 5'5", in comfortable shoes. Trump 6'1", 6'2". So in a two-shot on camera, she could be perceived to be small, less presidential. Her campaign has rightly complained about it, and they have adjusted the podiums in a manner that will make her appear to be more equal in stature. So you can take that off your worry list. The Clinton campaign pulled a stunt this weekend that backfired, and that stunt was inviting Mark Cuban to the debate. Cuban, of course, can't control himself either, and Cuban has been trolling Trump on Twitter and other places for a long time. So Donald Trump does what Donald Trump does, and of course this is the hope of the Clinton campaign tonight, is to light that fuse and make him say something jackassy. That's an actual technical term, Dave, a jackassy statement.
Really? I haven't heard that term before.
So they invite Cuban, and then Trump says, well, maybe I'll invite Jennifer Flowers. Jennifer Flowers immediately tweeted Trump and said, if you want me there, I'm there. The Trump campaign, after a bunch of heat, is now asked her not to show up, and she won't be there tonight. But the idea would be that since the first couple of rows are friends and family and supporters of the two candidates, Jennifer Flowers would be in Hillary Clinton's line of sight. This would be the woman amongst the many. It's a long list that President Clinton is alleged to have had affairs with. He actually admitted the Jennifer Flowers affair in the middle of the Monica mess years later. But Jennifer Flowers would be there to throw Hillary Clinton off her game the same way Cuban is there to throw Trump off his game. Now, last word, Cuban is still coming. So Cuban will be there tonight. But Jennifer Flowers won't be. And as much as it's just a I mean, it's such a ridiculous. You know how Trump would appear to be presidential? When Clinton pulls the dopey move and invites Mark Cuban to show up just to get in Trump's face, Trump would go, I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton thinks this is a game. This isn't a game. This is very important. So I'll be focused tonight. And maybe she should focus as well. There's your answer.
That's perfect answer.
Not, I'm going to invite the guy that slept with your husband.
Yeah. It would probably make her more feisty, though.
Nah, you never know.
You know, might make her even more.
Maybe she goes over the podium and goes after her.
Yeah. Can't fight.
As far as tonight goes, again, it starts at 8 o'clock. We will have coverage. When does our coverage start? We start as early as 7? Do we have a pregame or something? We got a pregame for this tonight? And the New York Times did something rather dramatic this weekend that I've never seen. Well, they wrote an editorial endorsing Hillary Clinton. That was no surprise. And there's Sunday New York Times. They actually wrote an additional op-ed page describing why Trump is a terrible idea. So, in other words, they said, hey, in case you missed the other one, let me just throw this in as well. They wrote a endorsement and an anti-endorsement, which I don't think I've ever seen in any paper, Chicago Tribune or anywhere else. Coming up after 8, Dr. Todd Graham, the director of debate at Southern Illinois University, he's got a piece on CNN you could read right now. So you can check into that. And I've got a text question for you as well related to all of this, and that is this. If you could ask either one of these terrible, terrible candidates one question, what would it be? You can get back to me, Dave.
I'm thinking. I
know. But you're trying to figure out how to maybe a Northwestern football question?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so.
Vin Scully last night, amongst all the other news of the day. I don't know where else we'll get this, so let's get this now. Vin Scully, after, is it 67 years?
67 years.
67 years doing Dodgers baseball, did his final regular season game last night. Now, the Dodgers will be in the playoffs, right?
The Dodgers clinched the National League West.
All right,
they're in the playoffs. This was his last home game. He's still going to actually do the series in San Francisco next weekend to close out the season.
Okay.
But his last game at Dodger Stadium.
Well, won't he be back at Dodger Stadium for the playoffs?
He's not going to do the playoffs.
Is that right?
He has said he will not broadcast the playoffs.
No kidding.
This is it.
All right, Vin Scully's final game includes something special here. Listen.
To all the players, God bless them, and to all you folks here in the ballpark, it's a very, very modest thing. I sang this for my wife. It was a loving gesture. You know the song, The Wind Beneath My Wings. And that's what you are. You're the wings beneath the team's wings. You're the team beneath my wing. So I know it's modest. I know it's an amateur. Do you mind listening?
And the Dodgers had a walk-off home run to wrap up his final game as well. Pretty cool. When was that a hit? 83, 84, 85?
Well, he said he had recorded that 25 years ago.
25 years ago.
Yeah.
How about that?
It was from Beaches.
Yeah, that's right. It was, wasn't it? Bette Midler.
Yeah.
So there you go.
How many weddings you been to where that's the song?
Yeah. Sad song.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that's what you go to weddings.
She died in the movie.
Well, you go to weddings and you hear songs that you know if you listen to the words and you actually got the meeting, you go, this has nothing to do with the wedding.
Exactly. Right. It's not, yeah, that should not be at a wedding.
How about I Will Always Love You, which is about a breakup?
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He's the worst quarterback that has played in the NFL the last 5 years.
Period.
Loser. And that's embarrassing. We look like losers.
And they weren't ready. Weren't ready.
He went from all Sean to some Sean to no Sean in about a month here. If you're not going to help us, get out of the damn way.
Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision. And folks,
I got a better word for it, Danny. How about, could it be possible this kid takes scared to death pill?
Scared to death pills. Scared to death. That's forwards. Dan Hampton standing by, the Hall of Famer. He watched it last night, too. And remember, when the Bears lose like that, I don't know, Hamp, I don't want to speak for you, but it's personal. You're a Bear for life.
Hey, good morning, guys. And, yeah, you're exactly right. It's you take it. It's a body blow. And, by the way, OB, who's counting? If he says, I got to work.
Oh, please. He's the best.
I'll give you some numbers if you're worried about counting. How about 274 yards of offense in the first half by the Dallas Cowboys against our defense? How about 19 first downs? 19 first downs in the first half. The only thing that stopped them was the end of the stadium as it went in at halftime. They had three touchdowns, a field goal. We never got in the way and never really put them in any kind of peril. And we had talked for 2 weeks about the inept offense, and you know, what are we going to do? Well, last night, the defense that we had kind of hoped would show up due to all the injuries, it was just, it was more of the same. And you know, I just got to tell you, I was on some win, never 0-3, never. And by the way, we're going on our second year starting 0-3 under John Fox. But the old maxim: experience is what you get when you don't get what you wanted. And all I can tell you is that hopefully down the road, you know, for these young players, this will be in like a flashpoint impetus saying, hey, we know what got us to 0-3. We don't ever want to go there. Let's do something different.
You know, there's been a personal aggravation of mine for the last several years in that tackling has changed. And when you have personnel that's not great, And tackling, especially an open field tackling now, has nothing to do with wrapping a guy up. It's throwing a shoulder at him.
Launching, yeah.
Yeah, launching. You're going to miss a lot. And the Cowboys actually had a guy who high hurdled one of the Bears last night, which for the rest of his life is going to be an embarrassment when that guy goes back and look at that tape. But the bottom line is this team wasn't ready to play. They aren't ready to play. And even with bad personnel, you still have to be ready to play. You get blown out in the first quarter. Sorry, buddy, that's coaching.
Well, you're right. And by the way, Chris Prosinski is the forever known hurdle now in Dallas. We used to be blocking dummies. Now we're being diversified.
We're opening it up.
We still had Akeem Hicks. We still had Jarrell Freeman. We had a first-round draft pick named Leonard Floyd. We had Willie Young. There was a lot of semi-veterans that at some point you got to start saying, okay, I build around these guys. We had some of those guys, and other than maybe one corner and the middle linebacker Sean Lee, there was nobody on that Dallas defense that would have started on our defense on opening day. But yet, you know, our defense gets dissected, and it's by another rookie quarterback. Now, here's the overarching thing that is starting to really perplex me. Brock Osweiler looked like Johnny Unitas in the opener. He had a total of 7 starts in the NFL, and then we had a rookie with 1 start in the NFL last week on Monday night that embarrassed us and pantsed us. Last night we had another rookie, a fourth rounder, by the way, down the food chain, fourth rounder that pantsed us on national TV. Well, guess what? 4 out of the next 5 games, we get real live bona fide NFL quarterbacks coming in. What now? So it's John Fox and the reason he was brought in was to restore a professional atmosphere. And you can't say that, you know, he was the guy that hung the trophies on the wall and did this and that. Well, he went to a couple of Super Bowls, but at the end of the day, there were reasons why he was let go in Carolina. There was reasons why he was let go in Denver. And I was kind of beating the drum about this last year, and especially this year in preseason. There's not enough of a focus on this team, and there's not enough accountability and discipline and all those, you know, those kind of old fashioned words that everybody kind of mocks. Well, guess what? The good teams, they're accountable. They play hard. They're disciplined. They do some, you know, I'm just saying, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. A year ago, they were in disarray. Now they're 3-0, and they look awfully good. And that's with a rookie. Because why? Well, they got some coaches that really have put those kids to task, and now they're starting to reap some of the rewards.
ChevyDriveChicago.com brings you Hamp, the Hall of Famer. Stand by. Dave Ennett will jump in with Hamp in just a second.
An animal!
Dan Hamp anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
This is the Bears fight song, as we mentioned. ChevyDriveChicago.com. Dave Bennett, say hi to Hamp.
Hamp, I don't know what to say. What? First of all, when's the last time you saw an NFL game without a sack by either team?
You know, in the post game last night, I said, yeah, I was incredulous. I understand that there's a dearth of pass rushing in the NFL today. Oh, by the way, Minnesota, they still rush the passer. They went down to Carolina and sacked Cams 8 times. But, oh, that's okay. That's for teams that want to win. You're exactly right. Let me just say this. I don't really care. You know, I'm glad our offensive line, was able to keep Brian Hoyer, off the ground. That's great. But I'm worried about the fact that you know, we got a rookie, Dak Prescott, and it's almost like we're American Idol now with cleats. We're trying to make stars out of everyone. Last week it was Wentz. This week it was Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott. They're household names now because not only can we not tackle, we can't get to the quarterback. And we always used to say, you know, the sack, yeah, that's gravy, and it's a good thing. But it's the pressure. It's hitting those quarterbacks. And I maintain that the tempo of the Monday nighter, the other fiasco in Chicago against Philadelphia, the tempo was set on the second play of the game. The Philadelphia Eagles ran a safety blitz. The tight end Paulson never even suspected it. He turned him loose, hit Cutler, knocked him, you know, rattled him, and Cutler was never the same the entire game. And I was on the other end of those blows for a long time. I know once you start whacking a quarterback around, the clock in the head, it speeds up. They can't make the same. Dak Prescott looked like he was in 9-on-7. He was throwing the ball perfectly with a spiral right on the money. And you can't, you will not survive in the NFL if you don't get to the quarterback in some form or fashion. Forget sacks. We never even touched this guy. So you're exactly right. It was an alarming stat that kind of just brought out the fact that, hey, however you cut it, we are not making plays. And it's got to be, you know, Akeem Hicks, he's a good player. Willie Young, they're good players. We're not making any plays. And again, we it's not going to – we've had the beginner set of quarterbacks. Now we're going to get the veterans. And, you know, when you talk about Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, these kind of players, my goodness, it's – you better figure out something quick because, we hear the balloon, you know, with the air escaping pretty rapidly.
I will say this, though. I don't think it was just the Bears with Carson Wentz because he looked pretty good yesterday once again against Pittsburgh. But what about you rattled off some of the guys on the Bears defense, Leonard Floyd. Should we be seeing more from him at this point?
Well, you would think so. He's getting an awful lot of playing time due to the fact that McPhee's out, Lamar Houston's out. And so it's like an accelerated, you know, learning curve. But even in simple things like coverage, you know, it's, again, you – and I understand the NFL. Yeah, you know, everybody wants to hide behind this. Oh, well, we only have so many padded practices. We only have the – I don't even know if we are practicing because other teams, they look like they're pretty prepared when we get into games with them. So why aren't these younger players, you know, making strides, getting better? And you brought up Carson Wentz. Okay. All I can tell you is, you know, talent is obviously of great benefit, but what you do with that talent, you know, there's 22 positions on a football team, but there's only one ball, and only one guy can touch the ball at one time. We're not working the other 21 positions enough. We're not doing the little things, the fundamentals and techniques and motions and all those things that try to get you in a position where you maximize what talent you do have. For instance, you know, the Philadelphia defense was garbage last year. Now you saw what they did yesterday. You know, Jim Schwartz came in and turned them around, and bam, they're coming. You see the Philadelphia offense. The coach was fired. They basically, you know, jettisoned two of the quarterbacks that they had used last year, and now they're 3-0. Doug Peterson, that coach, he's done an amazing job. So there are instances in the NFL where they don't have top of the line talent, where they don't have a bunch of number one draft picks at every position, you know. So somehow, some way, we've got to elevate our play. And sure, injuries, you know, the secondary. When the Bears play bad, I'm almost hostile about the way they played. Indignant. I, you know, it really bothers me. But the last two or three weeks with all the injuries, the crippling injuries at safety and corner, I'm starting to, you know, kind of feel bad for these guys. And by extension, Vic Fangio, if you're the coordinator, you call up a blitz or two and, you know, it doesn't get there, it gets picked up. Now you're in one-on-one and you're exposed and it's a big play. You know, you get burned. You basically say, hey, we're not good enough with who we have on the field at this moment. A bunch of no names. You start kind of, you know, getting away from the flames. So, you know, this team's got to find a way to regroup, to reorganize and get ready. You know, we haven't beaten the Detroit Lions since Lovie Smith was the coach.
So. Right.
There's a lot of incentive. We still haven't won a game at home. There's a lot of reasons to say if this team wants to get some respect back, this would be a great opportunity come Sunday.
I'm not sure that the Bears could beat Lovie Smith's new team right now. And by the way, they ain't good.
Western Michigan did. I think we got it.
By the way, the Bears 0-3 for the second year in a row. Last time they were 3-0, who was their coach?
What was it, Lovie?
Nope. Hamp?
Dick Geron?
Yeah.
Mark Trestman.
Come on, really?
Yes.
Trestman's first year?
Trestman's second year, they were 3-0.
Bring back Trestman. All right, it's not that desperate.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
Dean Richards live from Channel 9. Where are you right now?
I am Action Central. I'm at my desk.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty exciting.
It's completely exciting. Josh Brolin in the news today.
I was thinking about having a banana.
See, I told you it was really exciting. TV's
do you
top
like grape bananas, or do you like?
I like regular bananas.
Spotty bananas.
No, I like them. I don't like them green. You know, I like them sort of a nice, bright, fresh yellow where they're good for about an hour, and then they start to go bad.
I like them a little on the green side.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, but I do like a great banana. I don't like more than one banana in a day, though. If I eat a couple of bananas in a day, it's a bit much.
I just had a banana, by the way. Yeah. You can only have one.
Ripe or green?
It was kind of in between.
You and Andrea bring in bananas that look like they were beaten in a mob, you know, incident.
They're the best when they're like that.
No.
They're so
disgusting.
Nice and soft.
Ugh.
Can I tell you, a couple weeks ago, my dog ate 7 bananas all at once.
Dogs love bananas.
And what sort of, like a party trick?
He took them off the counter, ate them peels and all, 8 bananas.
Why would a dog eat bananas?
I have no idea. And nothing happened to him.
Wow.
There was no...
Oh, yet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, take cover.
Think about what else a dog will eat.
Yeah,
it's true. Dogs will eat anything. It's true. Yeah.
Or lick.
You've been listening to Inside Entertainment.
When I fill in for you on Wednesday, you can feel very comfortable that your ratings will be okay.
You got to understand something.
I'm doing 4 hours of banana talk. This is just a preview of what the entire show is going to be on Wednesday
morning.
See,
this is the number one talk show in Chicago.
Yep. There's a reason why.
It ain't banana talk.
I may bring up kumquats.
Oh, well, that's fine then.
But a lot of banana talk on Wednesday.
Highlights from Offfest. I don't know if you're going to have time to play my performance from Offfest. Buckwheat Zydeco in the new. You got a lot of stuff here. We'll get to all of it in just a second. Oh, and by the way, I want to thank everybody that came out to Governor's State Saturday night. One of my favorite shows we've ever done.
That was a good show you did.
I'm telling you, dude, it was tons of fun, and the people there were great. The Governor's State folks are great. The sound in that theater is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a great venue, and you were hilarious.
How do you know that? I mean, I was, but how do you know that?
I was in the back.
You coming out. I had to leave early?
I didn't want to. You looked busy. I was eating a banana in the back of the theater. I didn't want to bother you.
That's probably a good call.
Yeah.
But thanks again, everybody at Governor's State. It's great, great, great folks out there. Alana and the whole staff.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
Back to Dean at Channel 9. Actually, we've got a preview of tonight's debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Which we'll get to in just a second as well.
This must be exclusive.
It's so exclusive, I forgot we had it. A preview of the Clinton-Trump debate as it went down tonight, starting at 8 o'clock Chicago time. Roll it.
I know you are, but what am I? I know you are, but what am I? I know you are, but what am I?
I know you are, but what am I? Infinity.
That's tonight's debate, starting at 8 o'clock. Our pregame starts at 7.
That saved us a lot of time tonight.
Yeah, kind of did.
I like how we call it pregame.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what it comes down to.
Oh, it's completely. Absolutely, it's a game.
I know you are, but what am I?
Texter from the 847, on the off chance that anyone cares, banana should be eaten after it has freckles.
Ugh.
That's when the starch has turned to sugar.
Blech.
815, our dogs love bananas. We always share with them. 217, Texter, Dean, Hamilton tickets, lottery tomorrow. Am I limited to one ticket per person?
Six tickets per purchase.
But the tickets could be anywhere in the theater.
No, I think with this, you could. Oh, for the same-day lottery.
Oh, I thought that's what they were talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant because a new block of tickets also
Oh, that's right.
Sale.
So there's two separate things.
There's
here.
A new block of tickets going on sale tomorrow morning at
those
10 o'clock.
Are six tickets.
Those are the tickets that will range like $65 to $200-something dollars if you buy them directly from Broadway in Chicago. But the same-day lottery tickets, I believe that is one per person, yes.
Okay.
That's ten. Those are 10 bucks. But they're only selling 44 of those. So
right. And you could be sitting next to two people you would normally cross the street to avoid. But, hey, look, it's 10 bucks. Texter's Dean on the debate tonight.
Yep.
I said, give me one question you would ask if you had a chance to ask questions tonight in the debate. 312, I'd ask Hillary boxers or briefs.
Hmm.
847, simple question for Trump. How the hell did you get here? 217, Texter, I'm not excited about the debates tonight. I've watched most of them. I've come to recall that Hillary is my crabby old lady down the street who always yelled, get off my grass. Another texter says, will we get Hillary to get Gmail? They have better security. And again, it starts at 8 tonight. Good to see you, texter. You listeners taking this seriously. Again, if you don't have a question, make one up. Funny's good. Serious good. I'm just curious. What would you ask tonight?
We prefer funny. Prefer funny.
312-981-7200 is the telephone number. Josh Brolin was with Diane Lane forever.
Yep. 2004 to, I think, last year, something like that.
Right. Then it got bad when things got bad.
How do you divorce Diane Lane?
Yeah, she just seems really pretty.
2004 to 2013. She is so, like, jaw-droppingly beautiful.
I've never met her. In person, nice lady?
So nice.
Yeah.
So sweet, so nice. Sweet,
it smells like a fresh field of flowers.
She smells. Like puppy dogs and babies. She's very, very nice. And I got to say, Josh Brolin is nice, too. But, you know, you're married to Diane Lane.
And he's a great actor.
I don't care what your problems are in the marriage.
Yeah.
You get over it. You're married to Diane Lane.
Right. So he married Angelina Jolie, I'm guessing?
So he and Brad Pitt announced that they're going to live together. He married a model, a very attractive young woman named Catherine Boyd.
I'm guessing that'll last.
Big wedding in Northern California with, of course, his father there, James Brolin, actor James Brolin, and his stepmother, which amuses me, Barbara Streisand.
They're very sweet. Now, if Barbara Streisand's your stepmother and you're getting married, you go, hey, Ma, come up and sing something.
Yeah, right. Don't promise me.
Congratulations to them.
Congrats to the happy couple again. You could have had Diane Lane.
And what's the model's name?
Catherine Boyd.
I'm going to go ahead and look at
her. Yeah, look her up. She's a very attractive young lady, but.
How old is Josh Brolin?
Brolin? Let's see.
50-ish?
I'm going to say somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah.
Catherine Boyd. Oh, she is. Yeah, she's.
Recognize her.
Yeah, she's attractive. I mean, if you like that. And.
He's 48.
He's 48?
Yes, 48.
She is 17.
No.
Yeah, hold on. All right. Highest paid actors on television are who?
The top four highest paid actors on television are the guys in Big Bang Theory. James Parsons, number one. He made $24.5 million last year. After that, Johnny Galecki. He made 25 and a half for James Parsons, 24 for Johnny Galecki. Simon Helberg and Kunal Nayar each got $22 million. Just in comparison.
Mm-hmm. What about Kelly Cuoco?
Kelly Cuoco's on, this is just the list of the top paid TV actors.
Okay.
She's on the actress list, and she is tied for number one with Sofia Vergara, each of them earning $28 million.
Oh, there you go.
So she earned more than all four of her co-stars. That's with endorsement money. That's with movies. That's with, everything that goes along with it. So they're doing the Big Bang Theory cast, million per episode. Same money that Steve pulls down for doing this show.
Yeah, it's similar. This Catherine Boyd, she's no Diane Lane.
Oh, I don't think so either.
No.
I'm sure she's
very nice.
And by
the way, I know she's a model, but good God, woman, have a peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah.
Put on 3 pounds.
She needs a piece of cake. Somebody cut her a piece of Portillo's chocolate cake.
And tell me about Ozfest.
Actually, you know what? Ozfest was really fun. This is a two-day event that's organized by a rapper, Oscar winner, Grammy winner, Common.
Nice guy.
Saturday is called Community Day, and it's dedicated to community organizations for young people in Chicago to funnel positive energy toward young people in Chicago. And in addition to the music that was being performed, they had booths and all kinds of information about health, about jobs, voter registration, all kinds of different opportunities to funnel young people into positive things. There was such a positive vibe when I was there on Saturday afternoon. Really, really, really nice. And
that must have been right before you came out to my show, I guess. Huh?
It was. I went to the Ozfest and then drove out to... What suburb?
Governor State University.
Oh, yeah, Governor
State. University
that's
Park.
Right. I just kept heading south and came out and just quietly sat in the back of the auditorium for your show. Really, really, really fun and a surprise performance by Chance the Rapper. He was not scheduled to perform at all, but he and Common are good friends, both Southsiders, both very involved in doing positive things for the community. On Saturday, during the day, Chance the Rapper had his own festival going on, but made time to go to the Ozfest for Common. He was doing his own fest at is it still U.S. Cellular Field, or did it change?
It is still until November.
Guaranteed Bank,
Guaranteed Rate Field,
whatever
in
it's
November.
Called. Sox Park is where that took place. 40,000 people there for that one. That included Alicia Keys, R. Kelly. Lil Wayne was there. John Legend performed, and Common, returning the favor for Chance the Rapper, he shows up, surprise, at the Sox Park Festival and performs with John Legend the Academy Award-winning song Glory, which
that's
is pretty
a great
cool.
Song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great song.
And Kanye West made a surprise appearance there as well. I talked with Common on Saturday afternoon about the importance and why these festivals are more important than ever in Chicago.
I feel great that we both from Chicago and we can represent our city in that way. And I mean, there's others that do it on a grassroots level. Let me just be honorable and know that, I mean, be like, give them respect because there's people that's doing it. The teachers are doing it. It's like people that's really working within the community also, but we want to use our platforms too.
Now, Lin-Manuel Miranda been in Chicago the last couple of days. We talked with him the other day, and we asked him if he could give us some freestyle for the Cubs. It's a big year for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Who better to give us some freestyle for the Cubs than a Chicagoan himself? I know you're a Sox fan.
I do it like this. I got to give love. I'm from Chicago, so I say it for the Cubs. It's all good. People just might stare. If I say the Cubs, then I got to say the Bears, and we all there. Yo, it's like this. I'm serious. Maybe the Cubs are going to win the World Series, and we can say we can get into this. Even today, they're going to beat St. Louis, or maybe tomorrow we're going to do it. We do it for Chicago. If you like the Cubs, then come on and just follow, and I can tell you we're going to do it. This is Holder. Hold the microphone, because, yo, the curse is over.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
How about that?
That's pretty impressive.
I can see why you're going to do a collaboration album with him now.
Yeah, well, there's no question.
Just to be able to create something like that, spur of the moment. That's...
Yeah, because I walked out to him and I went, it's easy to smile when life's worthwhile and all is bright and chipper. But the man truly worthwhile is a man that can smile when he catches himself in his zipper. And he said, yeah, I got to roll with that.
Steve's big rap song, if you ever want to look it up on YouTube, there once was a man from Nantucket.
Right.
That the kids love it.
I opened with that Saturday. Of course, you know that because you were there.
It's dope.
Hey, before I let you go, I just was looking at some pictures of model Catherine Boyd married to Josh Brolin.
Yes.
And
are you still looking at those?
Josh Brolin's a good-looking dude.
Yep.
But Josh Brolin in most of these pictures look like the dad that just picked up his daughter, and she's sort of embarrassed to be in public with him.
The father-daughter dance.
Well, I think he has like a 20-year-old son or something. Her daughter.
How old is she really?
16.
I don't even know.
Not 16.
No idea. I really don't know. All right, buddy. Thanks.
Bye.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He is unqualified to be president.
Hillary Clinton lacks the judgment.
The scams, the fraud.
Hillary Clinton has evaded justice.
He clearly has something to hide.
Her conduct is disqualified.
Won't that be fun tonight? I'll live tweet it. 8 o'clock Chicago time, 7 o'clock coverage starts here on WGN. Standing by on the phone is Todd Graham. Todd is the director of debate at Southern Illinois University, and he breaks down the debate on CNN.com in a piece I would recommend you read that we'll repost to Cochran Show on Twitter and Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fine, doing fine. I'm actually looking forward to tonight because I'm sick like that.
Yeah, me too. I know, right? I wait 4 years for this moment, and then I go back in my cave, and then I come back out 4 years later.
Now, here's the thing. If we go back to 2012, the race was relatively close. We knew where most of the vote was going to fall. And shy of the 47% comment in that first debate, I think most people will remember, Obama was awful. And everybody started jumping up and down on the Republican side saying, Romney's a winner, Romney's a winner. Point being, even if one side or the other does dramatically well tonight, it's still not over.
Well, that's why they have the three debates plus the one vice presidential debate. I don't know if you remember, but the second debate is always the vice presidential debate. And they told Joe Biden, you need to make up for what Obama didn't have. And he came out with extra energy. So, yeah, he brought his A game.
So you break down in really a very clear and concise way what they need to do and what they need to be wary of tonight. Let's start with Trump manipulating the monitors. You point out moderators, I should say. You point out that he's been really good at that through this. But isn't that one of the things Lester Holt's got to be preparing for?
Well, I mean, you know, but it's harder to prepare for that than you think. Even if you know that they might be playing you, you don't want to come across as biased. And so in some instances, it seems biased if you ask one candidate, let's just say Trump, more questions than the other. But the fact is, perhaps he deserves more questions. And so it's really not fair to say one question for you and one question for the other person if, in fact, one of the candidates needs more questions.
And it doesn't work out that way. That's just not the way a live show is going to go anyway.
Yeah.
90 minutes, 15-minute segments. Trump being a critic of the status quo. I love the line here. He said he's a first-rate armchair quarterback.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's built
great at looking back and going, hey, look, we're not doing very well.
Exactly. Even if we're doing okay, he's great at looking back and saying we're not doing very well.
Oh, it's horrible. It's terrible, too, by the way.
Yeah, and by the way, other people are saying it. People are saying that it's not going very well, unless it's about him. And then people are saying it's going great. Fear-mongering, that's kind of in this similar category. But, yeah, he's the king of that. He's got a big personality. But this is interesting. Handling hostility. You say he's used to it, but nobody's got a thinner skin than he does.
Isn't it weird? He's got a completely thin skin, so if you call him a name, he will attack you. Yet, when an audience is hostile toward him, when he gets booed, et cetera, I've seen it throw people off. Believe it or not, it actually, in two different debates, there were only two times where Bernie Sanders had the audience a little bit against him, and he did not know how to respond to that. Donald Trump, I think he's been booed in his own office. No, he just knows how to do this. He knows how to handle it.
Well, and the thing that I don't think anybody's brought up, we certainly talk about it here, but I don't think anybody's brought up on a national level all year long. Trump has made a big, big, big noise about political correctness and how we're all too thin-skinned. And yep. Nobody is more sensitive than he is.
Yeah, he's the most sensitive person. And that's, I think, the Clinton's main argument, which is he just doesn't have the temperament to be president. So, yeah, I think that's a good argument. And we'll see tonight. I took the under. You know, I've been telling everybody, I've got a bet with a graduate student. 45 minutes is all Trump will be able to last before he starts with the personal insults and attacks. I took the under. I took the under of 45 minutes.
I would agree with you completely. And you make that point in and amongst Trump's weaknesses. Is the format is there's nowhere to hide. It's just the two of you. And if he doesn't have policy knowledge, which he's shown none of the entire time, how is he going to look presidential?
I'll tell you, I think it's going to be difficult because in the debates as they went along, one of Trump's problems, honestly, in the debates is his hubris. He thinks he's won every debate. He's said so many, many times because he reads the polls on Breitbart. So he thinks he actually won, which is one of the reasons he hasn't practiced.
People are saying he won.
People are saying I won. That's what he says. People are saying, a lot of people are saying I won. Well, here's the problem. Only two people on stage for 90 minutes. I think every debate that he had, he got a little worse in, and here's why. There were fewer candidates on stage. When he started, there were 10 people. He'd get like 8 minutes, no big deal. By his final debate, there were still four people on stage in the primary debates, and he was doing worse and worse because he had more time to speak. My best advice I would give Clinton, speak less, make Trump speak more.
I completely agree, because one of her weaknesses, and we'll pick her apart a little bit and also tout her a little bit in a second, is the fact that she has these long-winded, my least favorite professor-type answers, as opposed to being a human being. Hold on a second. More coming up with Todd. Again, it's Todd Graham, Dr. Todd Graham, Director of Debate.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead?
Dr. Todd Graham, Director of Debate at Southern Illinois University. Let's talk about Secretary Clinton. Look, she knows her stuff, right? She knows her stuff. She knows your policy. What else does she need to focus on tonight?
Well, that's part of the problem is she knows her stuff so well, she wants to talk about it too much. You know, she's like one of those know-it-all friends that you've got that you know, they don't mind telling you.
Cliff Clavin in a pantsuit.
Yeah, but there are time limits for her. So in every debate I've watched her, she just keeps going over the time limit. And the reason that doesn't work very well for you is she's like most people, which is she likes to finish her answers or her stories or her points with a really good sort of exclamation point. But by the time she gets to the best of her content, the timer is going. And I think I wrote something like, she runs over the moderator. She runs over the timer. I think she ran over my neighbor's dog. In every debate, she just goes over. She needs to make her answer shorter and more concise.
And we've seen her be a human being. We don't need to take her in for surgery, cut her open and make sure it's not just wires and stuff. We know she's a human because we've seen. As a matter of fact, this sounds like a ridiculous statement, but the Zach Galifianakis Between Two Ferns, she's got little moments in that which are hysterical where you go, well, she is a human being.
What? Yeah. Here's the problem. She's been trained as a politician, which means exactly the problem that Donald Trump has, which is we're not sure how he'll handle it if a foreign leader, for example, insults him. Well, she's been trained that you have to be insulted and just continue on because you have to keep doing business with people. But unfortunately, the American public, we aren't used to that. So if somebody insults you or me, you're going to see how we react. So it seems odd to watch her not react, for example, when she's insulted on a debate stage, et cetera. But that's kind of her training. So I think I'm hoping she's been trained in this debate to at least show a little bit more humanity because people expect that.
And I think she needs to be a little bit more positive as a contrast to his Death Star narrative for America.
Absolutely. In two different debates, I thought she had a very warm persona in her 8 debates against Sanders, and it's because she looked relaxed and comfortable from the time she walked on stage. She seemed to enjoy it. It was very enjoyable to her. And if that warm persona comes out, you know her policy answers are pretty good. So she'll knock it out of the park if she can just bring that warmth, that conversational quality that I think people are looking for.
I tell people all the time, look, it doesn't matter who you like. They're not coming to a barbecue at your house. What matters is who is going to do the job. So
what bothers me more is this whole what if they just meet the bar? What if the bar is set so low for Trump? We don't grade on A for effort, you know. So let's put it this way: nothing in your life do you grade that way. So let's say you're going to get open heart surgery, and one doctor, she's great, she's world renowned, but when you meet her, you were just like, she seemed okay in person. But the other doctor, well, not very good. He's had malpractice suits, and he's getting a 2-star rating on Yelp.
Right.
You meet him, and he's just, like, pretty slick and smooth. Which one do you go with? The world-renowned doctor who wasn't quite as good in person, or the 2-star Yelper with malpractice suits who exceeded expectations? It's just not how you make decisions in your life. Why would you make a decision about the president of the United States based on, exceeded expectations?
And I'll tell you the same thing I said to my British friends after the Brexit vote. You don't get a do-over.
Nope.
This is not a test. You know, this is somebody you are going to be constitutionally stuck with until they drum themselves out of office, which, by the way, in both cases is a possibility, which makes the vice presidential debate important.
I know. That's exactly right. And that's what people will be talking about. There's a chance that these vice presidents could end up being president if there's more legal troubles for the two people at the top of the ticket.
Big night tonight. Dr. Todd Graham. Everybody's invited to his house. He's a director of debate at Southern Illinois University, and you're always welcome here. And your CNN piece is up at CNN.com, right?
Yep, sure is. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll come back with more of the program. Mary, we'll get into this next hour. Mary had her dance-off this weekend, her big dance-off.
Dance-a-thing.
Yeah, she danced her little fanny off.
I almost got booted off, but I didn't say I danced. Yeah,
and it turns out Mary's husband got in trouble.
Uh-oh.
With Mary. Yeah. Well, you act like I didn't know about this.
What
I have people everywhere.
What are you talking about?
Didn't you hear from him?
Didn't he sneak a little hooch into the no-hooch event?
A little bit.
The Wintrust Community Bank Hour continues. News coming up.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I was wrong about Trump's possibilities, probabilities, and likelihood of becoming the nominee.
Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Trump has now received enough delegates to clinch the nomination to be the Republican nominee for president.
Thank you, darling.
He won. I lost.
I'm so honored. So honored by these people. They had such great sense.
Trump is so concerned about himself.
Guy says, I love your hair, Trump. You believe it?
He hasn't elucidated or explained in any way, shape, or form how he's going to get anything done from his stupid Mexican wall.
Maybe they'll name it after Trump. I'd really much rather have a statue in Washington, D.C.
He, of course, is in charge of our foreign policy and helped determine foreign policy.
If they're rattled in a friendly way, we're going to have great relationships with these countries.
I believe he's dangerous.
In terms of the draw, I won't have to worry about the draw. I'm the last person.
Careful, Democrats, what you wish for. Trump is very, very, very capable making Hillary Clinton crazy. He is now a 50-50 shot to be the president. But you don't start a fire to save a house. And that's my concern.
How about that whole deal?
God help us all.
I was in church last night. I was thinking, it's like the 2 Corinthians. You know, you got the 2 Corinthians. You got both of them. Donald J. Trump. This close to being the next president of the United States. By the way, I got in a fight. Well, not a fight. I got in a heated argument, if you will, with a very good friend of mine yesterday. We're playing golf. And I said, you're not voting for Trump. And he said, yeah, I am. And I knew where he stood.
It's not going to be good.
And he goes, well, you're not voting for Hillary. I said, I don't know who I'm voting for, but I know I'm not voting for Trump. I said, I might vote for Gazoo from the Flintstones, but I'm not voting for Trump. And then it started. And for the last 3 or 4 holes we played, which is, you know, most of an hour, it went from being brotherly to a little nasty. And I know a lot of you listening have gone through that same thing, no matter which side you fall on. But the main argument I continue to hear, from educated, successful, intelligent Trump supporters is, I could never vote for Hillary. She's the worst. Oh, I could never vote for Hillary. She's a liar. Oh, I could never vote for Hillary. That's not good enough. You have to throw Republican and Democrat out the window if you're a responsible citizen and say, who is qualified for the job? I don't like Hillary Clinton, but I may vote for her. And I'm leaning on May because I'm the one that 2 years ago sat here and said, there's not a chance. There's not a chance I'd vote for her. I never would. I never will. Well, then Donald J. Trump came along. And I really dislike being in the position I'm in. Because I don't like Hillary Clinton. I don't think she's the right person to be president of the United States. But I know she's more qualified than Donald J. Trump. Now, here's the difference. If Donald J. Trump wins, I will do the same thing I've done in the past. I will respect the office of the president of the United States because I voted for George Bush. And I'm glad I did. I voted for him twice. Made me sick when I would hear creeps like Harry Reid and others, Nancy Pelosi, stand up in the halls of the United States Congress and refer to the president directly or indirectly as stupid. The image of the office of the president of the United States matters in every corner of the world. And if you have someone in it who is Donald Trump, you're going to have problems. But I won't disrespect the office. And if Donald Trump wins the White House, I'll do anything I can to support him to be a great president. Doesn't mean I won't criticize him. We really wouldn't have a show then, would I? But I'll support him. If Hillary Clinton wins, will you, Trump supporters, support her? You can't just go, I'm 55 years old. I've never in my life seen this. But there's never been a time where it's more important to be less Republican or less Democrat and pick the right person for the job. And by the way, there's not a, and I mean this, and you guys know this, I've been swimming in this pool for years. And I've been around this guy. I've spent time with him. We've certainly spent time with her as well. And yet there's not a single person, not one Trump supporter on any level has given me one reason to believe he's qualified to be president of the United States. Not one. So tonight's the night, 8 o'clock Chicago time. Here's some more textures. Questions from you guys for Trump or Hillary from the 847. I just ask them both, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? That might be a good icebreaker for Lester to open it
that
up.
That always is a good way to start a conversation.
I know you are, but what am I?
815, I'd ask Trump how much his haircut costs and whether or not the economy can handle it. Do they get government haircuts? I think that comes out of your personal money.
I would think.
630, Trump question. How come there's no American women good enough for you to marry?
Who the hell knows?
319 question for Hillary. Will you outdo your husband in sex scandals while in office? I don't see that as a real threat. I think at 68, maybe that's not Hillary's number one worry. I could be wrong. And by the way, that's a big bar. That's a high number. You know, if you're going to knock down a Bill Clinton-like number in sex scandals, I mean, you're going to be taking up a lot of time. You got to focus. 224, I would ask the candidates if they are as shocked as we are that they're the candidates. Well, the answer to that would be yes. From the 224, well, here's a legitimate question. The 224, I would ask what we need to do to get weed legalized. And from the 214, I'd ask Trump, boxers or diapers? If he has diapers, I want you to know something. They're huge. There's no problems there, folks. They're huge. 918. Text questions from you guys. 312-981-7200. What would you ask Trump or Hillary if you're sitting in Lester Holt's chair tonight? Oh, Mary, you had your dance. Got Dancing with the Stars. Did they have a Dancing with the Stars episode tonight against the debate?
You know, they have one. It's from 7 to 8. And then they're having another show tomorrow night, probably 2 hours. So
okay, so there's
another long.
So they're not competing directly with
the
debate.
No, which is good because then I can watch both.
Because the networks are going
to
carry
about the debate.
How is it going to work? Who has the debate tonight? Is it just NBC or is everybody carrying it?
I bet a lot of people are carrying it. I'm guessing. I bet ABC is carrying it if they cut Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah,
or they
might
be doing commentary.
No, it makes sense that they would. All right, let's do this. We'll come back. We'll find out about Mary's dance competition this weekend, and I'll tell you how we did it at Governor's State. And coming up at 10, Bill and Wendy, are they in today? Have they recovered from the wedding? their producer Kevin.
Well, not unless they went with the on the honeymoon with
got
them.
Married on Saturday. Well, you know, a good tight show that would happen.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up as well. Oh, some more textures. 630, he's not dangerous. What did Trump ever say that got people killed? Okay, you have no evidence. Zero. You have no evidence, regardless of what you may believe or anybody else believes, that Hillary Clinton had people killed. You don't. 847, she's a crook. How about that? Okay, yes, I believe that she has done things that are criminally questionable. I don't doubt that for a minute. Here's a news flash. So is Trump, including his foundation. As recently as last week, we found out that his foundation was engaged in paying people with money from the foundation to cover lawsuits that were filed against him. 815, let's throw both Donald and Hillary out the window from the top floor. Why the hell don't you ever talk about Gary Johnson? Apparently because your radio's off. I've talked about Gary Johnson for a year.
Had him on the show.
Had him on the show for an hour and endorsed him. He's more qualified than either of these two by far. He's on the ballot in all 50 states, and the media never gives him a mention. Very sad. 815, turn your radio up. 630, Hillary is not qualified. Everything she did got people killed. Again, I'm sorry. It's just not true. 847, taxpayers pay for senators' haircuts. The barbershop is subsidized. Well, this is another reason Trump is going to be a problem as president.
Oh, man. He's going to bring his own barber. He needs one.
And again, I'm just reading these texts, but another text comes in and says, if Trump... again, I'm just reading this. I don't endorse this. If Trump is successful and puts up a wall, will there be any Mexicans left to cut his hair? Okay, first off, that's wrong on a lot of levels.
A lot of levels.
Yeah, and we don't find it amusing, officially. From the 815, has either one of them ever been in a Walmart? That's the other thing that stuns me about Trump. You know, the people that I grew up with, fine, hardworking, good, solid, blue-collar people, hardest-working people, just great people. And the vast majority of them where I grew up, they're Trump supporters. And Trump would cross the street to avoid every one of them. If he didn't think he needed them to go shake their hand, he would cross... He flies around in a plane with gold toilets. His 10-year-old son has his own floor in the Trump Tower. He doesn't understand poor people. He doesn't care about poor people. Who are you kidding? It's 9:22. We're back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Yes, David?
Well, just real quick. It is on CBS, NBC, ABC, PBS, Fox,
yeah, there you go.
CNBC, CNN.
Home Shopping Network.
Food Network.
Yeah. No.
Thank you, darling.
Uber's Dispatch.
Put on your red shoes and dance the blues.
9:26 in the middle of all the news from the weekend, too. You've got the police shootings in Tulsa and in Charlotte. The Charlotte... the city of Charlotte finally released their video of it. It's the same. And again, CNN is just the worst with this. They show this video and then they spend hour after hour analyzing it. You weren't there. You know, the woman in Tulsa, the police officer in Tulsa, she appears to have made a horrific, horrific error in judgment here in the way she handled herself. And, you know, her fear, whatever the case may be. So, and she's been criminally charged. In Charlotte, we don't know what happened. We still don't. The video certainly looks bad for police, but guess what? I wasn't there. And it's just very offensive to me that any of us who has never been a cop, who has never been asked to use a weapon to protect others or themselves, sits in judgment of them on our couch while the video rolls. And CNN is just going to the bank with this stuff. That's just awful. There's a shooting in Joliet over the night. A mother shot in front of her two kids, four-year-old grazed. We're keeping an eye on that, obviously. And more killings here in Chicago. And what's the status with the shooting in Houston this morning? Do we have an update on that? Steve Grzanich is on the seventh floor in the newsroom. Yeah. What do you know?
They're doing a news conference right now. Apparently, this is one of those situations where a guy got a weapon and just decided to go start shooting at cars that were going by and ended up wounding six people, none of them with life-threatening injuries, but he has been shot and killed by police. And it's all a mystery about what it was, yeah.
And what do we know? It comes down to the same thing.
Yep.
One of the biggest ways to stop this, you've got to keep guns away from mentally ill people. And my guess is that won't even come up tonight. 9:28. Let's do a palate cleanser here. Mary, how'd your dancing go Saturday?
Oh, gee, that's a good segue. Wow. It wasn't a debacle, I should say.
You advanced.
No. I mean, I did okay. I forgot a few things.
I thought they were advanced. I thought there's a multiple round thing.
No, it's a showcase.
Oh, so it was a showcase.
It was just a show.
Okay, okay.
So, you know, people came to watch, and which was very nice, and have, you know, bite to eat and just sit and watch.
But you love this dancing stuff. You love it.
I do. It's so fun, ballroom. So,
and you're very self-critical.
I'm very hard on myself.
Yes, and I've seen video of you doing it. You're tremendous.
Thank you, but after you practice so much and you want to do it right, and then you see all those people in front of you,
as Len and I have said many times, there is no perfection.
Yeah.
You know, it's just constantly striving for the same.
Do you wear like a costume when you're at these things?
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, you're talking to Mary. Sorry.
Yeah. I did a thing to Prince. I did a couple of Prince songs, so I wore purple.
Oh, about that.
I had a purple dress on.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Do we have photos or video that we'll see soon?
I had one. I had put one up. Okay. I didn't show it to you, though.
No, you did not. When will you dance again?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe we have to perfect this dance for sure. So I will dance again. But, you know, thanks to my mom for coming out and my sister Kathy and her husband Bob. And my husband Steve,
and
of course.
And your husband.
Yes.
Who snuck liquor into a no liquor event.
It wasn't a no liquor event. They just weren't serving liquor.
So he brought wine in a coffee cup?
No, it was a sippy cup, you know, one of those things you would put coffee in if traveling or other things, just so you couldn't see it. But, you know, after the dance was over, I was a little, you know, I needed to relax a little bit.
Oh, he brought it in for you?
Well, who do you think he brought it
in
for?
I thought it was his.
No, he was driving.
So wait a second, you're boozing at these events?
I was done dancing. So, and you know, my sister Kathy said, oh, got some wine over there? Yeah. So then everybody got kind of jealous.
Dave, you're the official lush of the show.
No longer.
Do you carry booze in a tumbler? One of those travel mug things, whatever they're called?
No.
No, you just have it right out in the open.
You just go out and buy it if you want it.
Well, they didn't have any there, and, you know, it wasn't a social event.
Hey, maybe your next...
Not saying I have to drink all the time, but it was nice of my husband.
Okay, all right. I want this
you
to
want
be...
that isolated?
I want reconsideration now, this whole official lush of the show thing.
I think your sequel dance, the next time you dance, it should be around a box of wine. It's just a box of wine in the center of the room, and it's your tribute to wine.
I don't like the boxed wine. It's not good.
Okay.
Well, we're glad it went well.
It would sit better in the car, though.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you. I'm glad it's over. I'm glad your show went well,
yeah,
too.
Thanks to everybody at Governor's State. We had a great time and one of my favorite shows, and everybody crushed it. All right, it's 9:31. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Much more to do before 10 in the Bill and Wendy Wedding Review Program on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The five stages of goodbye. Because in the home visit, if you're leaving the house, there's the goodbye in the kitchen.
Bye-bye.
There's the goodbye by the door where everybody puts their shoes back on.
Bye-bye.
There's the goodbye out in the driveway, and then the goodbye in the car.
It was good seeing you.
And then there's the goodbye as you stand in the way.
Well, see you later.
One more. The people that you forgot to say goodbye to.
That you go back for?
Oh, did you say goodbye to Steven, you know?
Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in.
There should just be a universal goodbye where you're either if you're at a restaurant
bye.
Or a house. Exactly.
You love your family, you love your friends. It's just like, okay.
There it is again, the flapping mouth. How odd. I want to see motion, movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
So long, farewell. I'll be just saying adieu.
Adieu, adieu to you and you and you.
Nicely done, as always. Jake, of course, directing the band. It's 9:43. The topics for tonight's debate, according to the LA Times, achieving prosperity, securing America, and America's direction. Now, those all sound kind of broad. But they could go more directly to what's that thing on your head? And to her, have you ever told the truth about anything? You know, something a little more specific? I don't know. Just wrote it out
there.
Get
right to it.
Catching up on a number of different things here. Sandberg's here. Did you survive your weekend?
I did, actually.
All right. So you and your new husband, what's his name?
Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet.
That's right. Full name, Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet. He is a Michigan Stater.
Yes.
And he had planned for the whole family, you guys and the kids, to go to this Michigan State tailgating family affair.
Yes. It was, I think, us and 70 of his fraternity brothers and their family members.
Right.
All organized.
So you got to get tickets way ahead of time. There's going to be a lot of strategic planning.
Think back
planning.
In May. This is when this got put together.
Right. And then there's a whole thing where the kids are with their mom and back and forth. Yeah. All right. So you get there, and the game was a disaster.
Yes.
Michigan State got spanked.
It was not a good showing, and right from the beginning, they never were in it.
Let's go live to Dave on this. Is Michigan State, are they bad?
I don't think they're a bad team at all, but I think that...
They were bad Saturday.
Perhaps expectations were raised a little bit by the way they went into South Bend and beat up on Notre Dame, and now I think we've gotten a better indication.
But
where
didn't
Notre
they know
Dame
the
is.
Effort that Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, and his wife Mary Sandberg Boyle went to and through to get there?
I'm surprised. Mark D'Antonio is a very thorough head coach.
Yeah. And part of his prep, I would think he would have known that you guys were there.
I would think so,
probably,
Mary.
Yeah. That's usually they welcome us with open arms. All right, on a better show.
So was Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, pouty on the way home?
Ooh, on the way home. Talk about the first 2 minutes of the game. There was a he. I've learned, Pat originally pitched himself as an easygoing sports watching fan, and he's like,
"Oh, that's ridiculous."
2 years ago, we went to go watch a game at one of his friend's house against Oregon, and he ahead of time thought they were going to lose. So he's like, "It's no big deal, they're gonna lose, so it's okay." Well, he sits in the back corner of the room, looking down at his phone with his hand over his forehead. The whole party of people that I didn't know, his other people he went to college with, and that's what he considered an easygoing viewing friend.
Yeah, it was nothing.
We no longer watch in public together because it's not fun, because he really cares in it. So he was very, very angry.
Well, one of the main concerns you had on Friday is what would you wear?
Yes.
Because everybody was in green.
Well, because...
And you don't like green as a color.
I do not. The stadium does this sections, green, white, because they're green and white.
And you were in the green section.
Turns out we're in the green section, so everyone's like, gotta wear green.
And is this your least favorite color?
Yes, I don't like green at all.
Okay, I think you'd look great in green, but that's fine.
I don't wear green. I wear a lot of navy.
Because usually blonde hair people look really good.
That's what I tried to tell her.
Yeah, I feel like the green sometimes can make your hair look like you've been swimming in a pool all summer. Like,
makes your hair look green.
Yeah.
So. Good thing you're not overthinking it. All right, so you're in the midst of your 70 friends.
Yes.
They're all wearing green.
Yes.
What were you wearing?
I was wearing white. And they took one of the guys took a panoramic shot of all of us in the stands, which is a pretty cool shot. And then it's like green. There's Mary. Green.
Was Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, upset that you wouldn't wear green?
He wasn't upset because he knows me. But he said it made it very easy to point me out at the tailgate. Like, I haven't met most of these people. And they say, which one's your wife? And he'd say, the one over there in the white t-shirt and beige sweater.
The one that you can see from across the stadium.
Yeah. So, but part of the way through the game, his brother was there in his seats with his wife, and we switched off, and his brother came and sat with the big group, and I went and sat with his wife, and they were in a white section. So I fit right in once I went over there.
Sure. I'm surprised the green section didn't kick you out and said you were over there.
I know.
Now, on Friday, when Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, came by the tower to pick you up, he busted you on something that made me laugh off and on all weekend. And that is that your argument for not wearing, Dave, you missed this, that her argument for not wearing green, she's not cheap, she's not going to do it just because everybody else did, she didn't want to wear it. And he pointed out that your favorite food group is?
Pizza.
Pizza and frozen pizza.
Yeah.
Which all of America eats.
I know.
So what's your rationale there, Trump?
I know. He's really got me over barrel on that one, because the don't be a sheep is something I was taught from my father.
Yeah.
You don't want to be a sheep.
Be an individual.
Be so-and-so's doing it. We want to do it. You don't want to be a sheep, Mary. I'm like, I'm right. I don't want to be a sheep.
Right.
So I'm a contrarian in every aspect of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one thing I found out, that study was released last week, and turns out women 35 to 43 are the biggest consumers of frozen pizza that work out 3 times a week or more. So that's
right.
Me. I'm in that category.
You work out and eat a frozen pizza.
Yeah. So
I don't understand how they came to that conclusion.
They told people, I guess.
They went to gyms and they followed women home and they saw them eat frozen pizza.
Or they saw us in our yoga pants purchasing the pizzas at the store. So I'm a sheep. And so he's...
I guess the reason I enjoyed it so much when Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, brought it up is because... Dave, you know this. We as husbands are so rarely right.
Rarely.
Right?
I can't even say I'm right about that.
Yeah.
You guys may be right.
You got to call him and check with your wife.
Yeah.
We just don't tell you when you're ready.
I really enjoyed that moment.
Yeah, and it was one of those rare moments where he had an audience. It was you and John DeCasse. So yeah. It wasn't even
professionals.
Yeah. And both of you know that I like to point out when everyone else is wrong.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, we're having a meeting in 10 minutes, so you can point out my flaws. It's 9:50. I'm glad everybody survived the weekend. Thanks again for coming out to Governor's State. We'll come back, wrap it up next on 720 WGN. I hope you'll take a look at the blog that I wrote on Mr. Palmer. Arnold Palmer died yesterday at the age of 87. A standout college golfer at Wake Forest was expected to do well as a professional and did. First man to win 4 Masters, but it was a relatively short period of time where he was king of the hill. And then Nicklaus came along, and really Nicklaus and Tiger, without question, is the argument about who was the best to ever play the game. But Palmer's certainly in the team picture as one of the greatest players of all time. But as I write in the blog, the first superstar in sports. There was a friend of his, a guy that he kind of barely knew him at the time, but a guy named Mark McCormick in Cleveland. On a handshake, they started a company together that became the largest sports talent agency in the country. And everything that became sports, pop culture, I would make this argument. Certainly without Palmer, you don't have the thunder of Michael and Tiger in the same timely fashion. But without Palmer setting the stage for all the dominoes that fell after, athletes don't make the endorsement money they make today, and they aren't the impactful people on society that they are today. Now, Palmer also started a hospital in Orlando. He was a renowned pilot. And with his success, he was able to go home and buy the club, the private little country club, that he grew up on, which is really a Muni golf course that you have to have a membership for in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, where his dad was he head greenskeeper or pro? I think he was head greenskeeper. And Palmer bought the tractor his dad used to use and bought the golf course. I mean, he had an amazing life. He really did. Survived by a couple of daughters and his second wife. His wife, Winnie, died a few years ago. But if I know Arnold Palmer and I know golf, they're about to make the turn. It's Palmer, his dad, it's probably Byron Nelson, maybe Hogan if he's in a good mood. Mm-hmm. And he's playing golf again.
It's probably a pretty good bet.
He's an amazing man. And we know everybody, and we don't know anybody that ever said anything negative about Arnold Palmer. So check out that blog, and also check out the story from Dr. Kevin Most this morning when he caddied for Arnold Palmer at Butterfield at the age of 16. Pretty cool.
Quote from Arnold Palmer.
Yeah.
I have a tip that'll take 5 strokes off anyone's golf game. It's called an eraser.
9:55. Bill and Wendy next.